Hey guys, this is Erin Nicole, and I am going to be talking about a special episode all about designing proper programs. Because I don't know about you, but there's different gifts that we all bring to the table, and some of those are inherent, we're born with them, and some of those we learn along our journey. I had the pleasure of, in graduate school, choosing to do a project instead of a thesis, which is essentially researching what someone else has created. I'm a creator. So I said, ooh, I get to work a year on a project that helps to improve people's positive behavior health habits. And so I learned how to do proper research study design, how to design it properly to make sure that it is effective, that the study itself does not have any variables that could actually make the results skewed, things like that. So when we're actually measuring, is this program effective? We're wanting to measure what we are actually measuring. So let me break that down simply. In order to have an effective program, you have to start with the end in mind. So what is your goal by the end of said program? Start with, just like you would with your vision statement for your life, maybe it's 5-10 years, where do you want to go, right? Where is the direction you're wanting to take? From there, you're gonna break down the steps based on what that goal is for you. Maybe you get to pick your goal yourself, or maybe this is something that has been assigned to you at your job, or maybe you're starting your own business and you're wanting to create a program. Whatever it is for you, start with the end in mind. That's what I did in my graduate school project, which is called Project Asthma, if anyone cares. I actually was invited to present it at the, it used to be called AFERD. They've changed their name to Shape America. So this is the regional, Northwest Regional Conference in, I want to say it was 2012, because that's the year I got my master's. It was held in Bozeman, Montana, I believe. I know it was definitely Montana. I wasn't able to attend. I didn't realize that I had to pay for my travels and whatnot, and I had a college budget at the time. But to be recognized and be acknowledged as the only person that brought a program that included dance without any professional expertise in my background, other than summer schools in high school with a choreographer down in California, Weed, California. So anyways, kind of bunny trailing with that. But so I learned how to design an effective program with measurable scales, making sure you start with the end in mind, that vision statement, if you will, or objective statement, and then working backwards. So I encourage you to start with the end in mind, otherwise you're gonna waste a lot of time and have to adjust your program accordingly. Next steps, you wanna measure where are you at right now, whether it's you or if you have participants, clients, students, et cetera, et cetera. If you're a teacher, if you lead group therapy, if you are a business owner or manager, you want to measure where your people are at. For my program, in when I worked in the psych hospital where Move Happy was birthed, I had two objectives for my program. I wanted to improve their mood, their happiness. I wanted to help empower them to be able to improve their mood. Not me, but help them to be able to have that power and confidence that they could do it themselves by taking actionable steps within the program. And I also wanted to improve their fitness because I knew how closely tied that was to their mental health. And there's a lot of studies and research that you can go and look if you haven't heard fitness helps with your mental health. So I wanted to make sure that we were measuring where they were at. And there were no questionnaires that were empirically based that I had available to download without purchase, and we did not have a budget. So I created my own simple questionnaires based on the objectives and goals. And I had it evaluated from the team that I worked with within the hospital. So all of the materials were evaluated from psychologists, psychiatrists, occupational therapists, recreational therapists, myself, music therapists. There was a variety of eyeballs on the program to make sure that the questionnaires, the content was effective and that the language was appropriate for the audience, because I still was learning names of the patients. Like, I was brand new there, a couple months. So questionnaire one is the happiness questionnaire, and a simple one-pager. I had Likert-style questions, which is like a 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 scale, where the person is self-reporting how they're doing that day in that moment, how they're feeling, and answering those questions. And then I also included open-ended questions for them to fill in some for feedback, or if it was the first pre-questionnaire before we started the program, for them to write down what they were hoping to get out of the program so that I could understand where were they struggling before they started and what are they expecting out of just the brief description that they heard from their treatment team. And then the fitness questionnaire was a simple, also one-pager, and we did minimal equipment for measuring their fitness. So for example, we did max number of push-ups, whether it was wall push-ups, windowsill push-ups, modified with knee on the ground, if they could get down on the ground and back up. They got to choose their level of fitness, but we measured the same thing pre, mid, and post so that we were actually measuring improvement. Max squats, you know, simple basic fitness areas that if you have a background in fitness education, you'll understand what I was trying to measure, which was the 5 components of fitness, so that we could get baseline numbers. We already had their BMI from the registered dietitian because they measured them at least monthly, if not more frequently, so that was helpful to include that and measure those changes as well. So measuring where and starting where you're from, knowing exactly your starting point, it can be kind of, you know, negative news if it's health-related, fitness-related, nutrition-related, weight-related, right? It's kind of like you have to be that bearer of bad news. But it's a starting point, and that's the whole point, is to get people jump-started, get them excited that, hey, you made a decision, we're in this together, we're going to be working every day or once a week or twice a week, whatever your frequency is, and we need to be able to actually know that we're improving. And in order to do that, we have to measure it. So that's the next step. So vision statement, start where you're headed, measure where you're at currently, and then what's your time frame? For me, I did it in the hospital. I asked, hey, what's the length of the semester here? And for that, the first round, I believe it was 15 weeks, the first round. And then the second round, it was 16. So I said, all right, I'm going to make 16 weeks worth of content to cover our bases. If there was ever 17, I added another weekly content. With any program, if you're leading a group, if you are facilitating, whether you're in a workplace, whether you are in a medical setting or a school setting, you always, always, always are going to have an introduction icebreaker week or day or moment. You have to have some sort of icebreaker within your program. For me, it was an entire week where we're getting to know each other, doing icebreaker questions to start building trust, building confidence, and easing them into the program. That's where we also included the questionnaires to measure the progress. And I let them know, and this is something you could do as well, is be super clear with your audience of what is going to happen. Most people don't like surprises when they're in a group setting. So if you communicate in advance, it's going to help you when you get to that midpoint or that post point, and they're now starting to really enjoy the program, they're in the flow, they've got that routine down with their friends that they've now made within the group. Letting them know, hey, we're going to measure where we're at, see how far we've come. you're not telling them something brand new that week. You've already let them know in week one what's going to happen throughout the program. You're leading this. So that's the next step, is, you know, kind of having that first week of icebreakers, getting people comfortable, setting the standards. My personal style of facilitation is not boot camp militant style. That's not my personality. And also with the audience that I was working with, most of them were overweight and or obese. So there's a lot of barriers that they have to feeling confident and comfortable with starting an exercise program. And we also didn't have areas for them on our floor, the treatment mall, to change into workout clothes. So I did a lot of communication in advance and reminders when we did escorting before, during the lunch break. Hey, make sure you got good shoes on. Make sure you got a coat. If we're thinking the weather is good, we're going to go outside today. You know, bring what is going to help you feel successful. Those little reminders and whatnot are super, super helpful when facilitating a group. Be easy on yourself and be easy on the group. If it's the first time you're running the program, like, I've been teaching in a variety of industries and fashions. I've led groups for schools. I've led groups in college. I've led with faculty. I've had a lot of opportunities to lead groups of all different ages, shapes, sizes. And what I've learned is that no matter what, the first go around is always going to be not as strong as what it can be because it's the first time. So people are learning your vibe. They're learning kind of what the expectations are. They're also, if they're in a psych hospital setting, they have their own mental illness and experiences with building trust with people. And some of them are going to trust you right away. Some of them are going to be like, I'm not going to talk. We had, for example, one of the guys, he was not wanting to participate at all. His treatment team actually said, you are joining this group. So he was voluntold, we'll say. And he told me in front of everyone, I'm not going to do this program. This is a dumb program. This happiness stuff is fake, something to that effect. And I said, okay, I respect where you're coming from. I validated him. Just know that whenever you're ready to join in the group, we're fine. We just ask that, you know, if you can let the group participate and try your best to, if you can't say anything nice, you know, just being here is fine and do the best that you can. Join us when you're ready, kind of a thing. I wasn't going to push him into, you need to answer how you can be happy. Because if someone doesn't trust you, they're not going to open up their heart and they're not going to start building community with the other members in your group. So understand and recognize that there's going to be some challenging people. But if you kill them with kindness, that's what I just say, just kill them with kindness. For that guy, by the end of the first week, he was smiling outside my office. He was sitting down next to my office door, and he was sitting down every day. And I would always ask him, hey, how you doing? And he would say, hey, so-so. And he was just kind of one of those, like, Snuffleupagus, if you know the character from Sesame Street, just really depressed, slow, like always in a sad mood. Everything was so-so. And that day, 7 days after being in the program, he didn't participate in any of the content. He was just absorbing the energy from his classmates or patient, you know, fellow patients, and he's sitting, I'm laughing because I'm thinking so vividly about this moment. I'm about to go into my office. All of the doors are locked for safety and security. So I have, like, getting my key out, and I see him and I say, hey, how's your day going today? And he said, great. I about dropped all of my books. I said, whoa, what's going great? And he said, you know, I have to be honest, I didn't want to join your group. I was told to join your group by my treatment team, and so I was frustrated because I didn't get a choice. I was nervous because I haven't exercised in a long time, and I know that my fitness isn't as good as it used to be. And I thought you were going to make me feel uncomfortable with that, or I didn't know what to expect. But now I recognize that you just want me to give the best that I can with what I have available for that day, and I appreciate you not pushing me into, you know, sharing in the journal responses. He said, from now on, I'm going to participate in everything every day, and I want you to know that I appreciate you. Holy moly, guys. I was blown away. And he did. He did participate every single day. Towards the end, he was in the third round, so I had three or four veteran Move Happy people that were in the group that had gone through it a couple times before that started becoming leaders within the group, and they started encouraging him, you know, helping him pass the journals, things like that, asking him, hey, man, what do you think about this question? That's a great, you know, response. They were starting to encourage him like I was doing that first round by myself. So be easy on yourself the first time you do it. If you're consistent with what you're looking for and you're clear on the direction of the group that you want to take it, the group will start following your lead and will become ambassadors. Another tip too is, and if you're a teacher, you're listening to this, you're probably nodding your head, find leaders within the group, those that are showing potential, that maybe they're looking slightly bored, or maybe they're, you just know that they are able to add more to the group because of their either cognitive ability and or you have a good feeling about them and you want to give them an opportunity to shine and to help the group. For example, one of the guys in the group, he had a hard time when he would say a sentence, a lot of it was not in coherent English. Some of that had to do with his mental illness and also some addictions to drugs that had affected his brain and his communication. However, he understood so much in the group. And if you asked for simple support and directions, he stepped up to the plate. So I didn't know whether he was capable or not, but I asked him after the first round, I said, hey, if you're joining next round, I could really use some help. I've been writing the journal prompt on the board and the page number, and I'm also taking attendance and I'm helping people that are coming in late, and there's just a lot that I have to do as a facilitator. How do you feel about being in charge of writing the journal prompt and the page number on the whiteboard every day to help everyone in the group stay on track? He lit up, he smiled, he said, I think I could do that. Yeah, I think I could do that. Not only did he do it with excellence, he stepped up to the plate and the rest of the group started helping as well. I had another person ask if they could pass out the journals. I had another person ask, can I pass out the pencils? Because we had some of the patients in some of the group therapy had in their treatment plan. They either, you know, ate odd items and so we had to keep pencils away from those patients, or they had violent tendencies, and if they were having a rough day, we had to keep pencils away from those kinds of patients. So we had to pack up all our items after every group session. And so for the patients to start stepping up and offering to help with that, to speed it up so that we could get more into the content, they wanted to participate. They loved what we were doing. So give it time. Be clear on the direction you want to take the group. Add as much value as you can, and ask for, this is the next one, feedback. So one of the most successful things you can do as a group facilitator, as a teacher, as a business person, leading teams, is get the buy-in, get feedback, get perspective from those that are in it with you, that are participating in it. So part of the survey questionnaire that I had, I asked at the end, the last week we had a closure week with closure activities and filling out, doing our closure fitness measurements to see how successful their fitness improved, how much control they felt over their happiness level and their mental illness through the happiness questionnaire, and a part of that was open-ended questions. I asked them, if you could direct this program, what would you add, what would you take away, and what would you keep in the program? And those questions were dynamite because I implemented what I could see consistently being provided as feedback from the patients. And if you have an opportunity as a facilitator, group leader, teacher, parent, business leader, if you have a chance to lead others, if you let them know that you care about their perspective, they will give you 1,000% more energy, more effort. They will give you more than you could ever imagine. So towards the end of the third round of the Move Happy program, keep in mind these are roughly about 15 to 16 weeks long. We had a couple days in between for charting notes and or moving offices if we needed to, cleaning up, et cetera, et cetera. So by the third round, this is 2017, close to June. It was like May 2017. I get interviewed to have an awesome opportunity to have a promotion within the hospital. There were 17 other people that interviewed for this position. They had over 100 people apply, and they could only interview 17, but that still was a lot. And then I got the promotion. It was down to me and a licensed therapist without experience. She just graduated, and then myself with practical experience. I was doing one-on-one sessions with some patients after all four of our group therapy offers, because I got really fast at charting notes and got really effective at my general responsibilities. So I interviewed for this position, and I had to have my group covered from someone else. So my next tip for you is to make sure that your directions are simple so someone else can run the program for you. Run your group if you're sick that day and you need a substitute teacher, or you know, if you're normally the parent that takes care of the kids but you've got a special thing you got to get to and it's your spouse that's in charge. Keep it so simple and duplicatable that someone else can run it for you when you're not there. I didn't know whether or not mine was duplicatable until I said, hey, I've got this interview, can you cover for me? And the gal, Sue, was covering for me. Super cool lady. I'm so grateful that she did, because she had experience. She had been working at the hospital, I'm going to guess probably 10, 15 years. I don't know the exact age she is, and I don't know how long she has been there, but she's been there a long time. So she wasn't new to the patient. She knew all of their names, so that helped a lot. And when she was facilitating with the group, I said, don't feel like you have to do all the workouts that I was doing. I designed a variety of exercises for the patients with the intention to hit all of their major muscle groups throughout the program with a variety of ways to move in different planes, because I have that background in group fitness and exercise program design. But I don't want you to feel like you have to do everything exactly the same. Do what you feel is safe, effective, and comfortable for you to facilitate, and is fun. Number one, most important, is fun. Because an additional goal that I didn't mention in the beginning of this podcast is my goal is that it also benefits the mental health, happiness level of the facilitator. I designed this program to help my patients, but I was also designing it to help me get out of my slump, my depression from losing my father and going through all the trials and tribulations I had that previous year. So she was able to cover the program. She stopped me in the hall when I was training for a couple weeks for this new role, half day, and I'm walking back to my office, and she says, Erin, I gotta tell you, I love your program. Not only do the patients know exactly what to do, So-and-so passes out the journals, so-and-so writes the journal prompt on the board, passes out the pencils, everything is smooth. I love working out with them as well. We're doing the walking instead. I'm not doing anything special in the workouts just because I'm comfortable with my abilities of walking with the patients. We go outside when it's sunny. Patients are happy. I'm happy because I get to work out during my work day. And I'm so appreciative of you designing this. The journal questions are spot on. Everybody's voice is heard because that former cranky person that was always saying he was doing so-so, make sure that every single person's voice is heard and no one is interrupted. Aaron, well done. I will sub for you any day. So that told me that my program was effective and duplicatable, and some tips that I'm just breaking down and analyzing, okay, how did I know if it was duplicatable? I didn't know until I tested it out, but I will say, keep things as simple as possible. If you've got a program or you've got a lecture or you've got curriculum that you're designing, you're working on, keep it simple. It doesn't mean you can't have science backed up and evidence-based information, and it doesn't mean that people aren't going to be learning important things. But create some way that there's routine within your group, within your methods and curriculum. For example, we always started with the journal prompt, quiet writing, reflection time for a few minutes, and I would take attendance. That consistency to start the group in the same way helped to bring cohesion. It helped me to keep order in the beginning as well of, okay, if we've got, you know, an odd number of patients and we were doing some sort of like partner workout, I have to adjust that to maybe threes or whatnot. So it helped me when there was going to be changes that were on the fly to be more prepared. Also, closing out, we would close out with a warm down, and we would do some sort of flexibility stretch and include a meditation if there was time. This was the last group of the day before escorting them back upstairs, so we did get cut 5 minutes off the time that normally it was a 50-minute group. That one was 45 minutes, but still we were able to close out consistently with meditation or stretching, something that was consistent every single day. And I asked for their interest. Okay, we know the importance of meditation. This is an exercise group and also a journaling group. I want it to be holistic. I want to include every aspect that's going to help you in a holistic manner. What do you guys like? Do you guys like calming music to kind of cool it down? Yes. Okay, cool. Let me try this one out. Do you like that one? Cool. Don't like that one? Okay, let's change it. So getting them to share what they like, what they don't, in the areas that I was willing to change in the program. And that, honestly, those are the things to help create an effective program. The next step is to make sure that your program is evaluated. If you are going to implement it to, you know, fresh eyes and it's something brand new, have someone look over it that has maybe more experience than you or has different professional experiences with, you know, a different level of expertise. For example, I have exercise psychology background. Maybe having someone with physiology background or occupational therapy or psychiatry background, take a look at it so that, because they have different perspectives from you. If they check out your program, they say, hey, you know, what do you think about this, for example? One of the staff that looked at my program goes by they, them, there. They suggested that I added a question to include their gender preference to see if, when we were measuring the success of the program, if it was inclusive to all people of all backgrounds and all gender representation. I never would have thought of that myself personally, and I'm so glad that they provided that feedback to me, and which actually helped for some of the patients that did identify in that manner. And also the LGBTQ plus community, for them to feel safe that this was an inclusive fun environment that they could build community and trust, and focusing on what do we have in common as a group. So those are my tips on building an effective, designing an effective group, designing an effective program for groups either in schools, businesses, medical facilities. Your next step, of course, if you're able to and can afford to, is to get your program accredited through a large organization that is recognized either nationally or internationally. That's the next step where I'm taking my program, is to get it accredited. I am looking into one of the top organizations is the Joint Commission. So if anybody's listening that works there or is on the board there, I'd love to have a conversation. Because I do care about keeping things professional, and I always want to give my best. And that means that you constantly are making improvements to what you design by getting feedback, by using your own mind to evaluate how did it go from my perspective, how can we take it to the next level. So thank you guys so much for listening. I hope that this special episode of designing your own program effectively was helpful to you. If there is anything a part of this podcast that did add value to you, I would love it if you would screenshot the section or write like the minutes in a social media post and then tag us on social media. You can tag us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Real Move Happy. On Twitter, we are at Move Happy Team. On Snap, we are at The Move Happy. On LinkedIn, we are at Move-Happy. You'll see the purple, lavender, and gray logo that pops up with the little R squared, or R with the circle for registered. And you can also tag me if we're friends on Facebook and whatnot with my, you know, my regular name, Erin Nicole. And I really appreciate you taking the time to listen. I really do hope that I add value to you today. I know my program was effective. I had a lot of patients tell me, and I earned a promotion within the hospital because the patients went to bat for me. And having that interview with someone telling me, wow, you made this for our group. Make sure you get it copywritten, Erin. This is great. Thank you so much for adding value to the hospital. So I know that it worked for me, and I know that it will work for you. So take action today. Make sure you're following your dreams.
And those of you that are paying attention to our fun contest, once we get to 10,000 downloads, I'm going to be hosting a private VIP concert for those that are consistently sharing our content, writing reviews, tagging us on social media. You will get a special invite. So right now where we're at is 1,775 downloads. So I'm super stoked. We're growing about 100 every week, and that's without any paid ads. That's completely organic. That means you are helping spread the word. So thank you. I want to give that gift back to you. I will be having other musicians as well. We've got OK Mayday has said yes. We don't know a date yet, so they're totally on board, but they also might not be able to depending on the date. So hurry up and listen to these episodes and make sure you're sharing so that we can include you in the fun concert. And I'm thinking also one of my guests that I have not aired her episode yet, she was featured on Fox Sports and NBC as a singer at the Atlanta Braves game for the national anthem earlier this year, I believe. So, well before COVID hit. So, super, super stoked. Those of you that are connected with me on LinkedIn, on my professional Erin Nicole channel, we just did the Saturday fun concert in honor of the World Mental Health Day on Saturday, October 10th. So if you haven't had a chance to check that out and you want to see if I'm worthy of listening to and my friends, definitely go check that out. It's hashtag sounds like LinkedIn spirit. If you spell it out loud on Siri, it will add an E. So you got to take that E out and then click on that, and you'll be able to see all of the posts that were shared from a variety of musicians. I had the honor with Lorian Sayer. who is a Grammy Award-winning lyricist, vocalist. She's a former NFL cheerleader, former pastor. This girl is amazing, and I should say woman because she is such a golden, beautiful angel. And she's got a great family as well, so super excited that she took time out of her day to help me write my world debut song that debuted this last Saturday. So definitely check that out, and hope to see you guys on social media. Don't forget to tell someone you love them today. See you next week.